The following program is produced and furnished in conjunction with John Gilroy of Lectromech, which is entirely responsible for its content.
Welcome to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy of Lectromech, providing solutions to design, certify, and maintain aircraft wire systems. Every week, John speaks with public and private sector IT experts about some of the IT trends and challenges facing agencies and industry. Now your host, John Gilroy.
Welcome to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. This morning we have two gentlemen in the studio. We have Mehul Sanghani and James Vant. Mehul is the CEO and James Vant is the Senior Vice President at Octo Consulting Group. Good morning, gentlemen. How are you?
Good morning.
Good morning.
Thank you.
Now, while I get up this morning, as I always do, pretty early, and I went to my little computer and I typed in Federal Acquisition Reform, I got 3 million hits. And then I typed in Agile Software Development. I got 30 million hits.
Right.
And I said, well, how can we put this together like, you know, peanut butter and jelly or I don't know what, you know? And I think many of my listeners, you know, they're involved in the world of federal IT and they're thinking about, you know, this acquisition reform that's going on now and different ways to purchase things and flexible and agile ways to purchase things. And how does that apply to software development? And earlier this week, I saw a press release from a company called Octo Consulting Group, and I got a hold of them and said, well, geez, you guys come in and talk about what you're doing, because you're hitting that. It's like in, what was the movie, Ghostbusters with Crossing the Streams?
Right.
Kind of crossing the streams of federal acquisition and software development, IT reform, saving money, being flexible, all kinds of topics here. So that's why I brought these gentlemen in. But before we begin, perhaps you could start with your background here. Mehul, a little about your background and how you, you're one of the CEOs of this company, right?
Yeah, I'm the CEO, the founder of the company. I founded the company in 2006. I had previously worked in the community. I'd worked at Booz Allen Hamilton for a number of years and also with Gartner. And obviously, many folks in the IT community are very familiar with Gartner. Based off their research component, but both Jim and I had the good fortune of working together within their management consulting, their advisory group. And so I left both of those places to try and start a different kind of firm. I really felt that there was a gap in the marketplace relative to not just culturally in terms of the traditional contracting firm, but firms that approached the marketplace differently in terms of the services that they provided, namely digital services that could support the customers. But, you know, seeing things both at Booz Allen and at Gartner gave me a unique purview into some of those challenges. And, you know, I set out to start Octo to try and tackle some of those things.
What's this thing on Netflix, Orange is the New Black, and your motto on your website is efficiency is the new innovation. Hmm?
That's right. Yeah. And I think nowadays, I think there is a lot of talk. There's a lot of pressure in this budgetary environment. You have a lot of CIOs, a lot of IT executives that are trying to innovate in an environment where budgets are constantly decreasing. And I think to the degree that you can provide efficiency, you then provide the means that allow those executives the assets, better access to resources, be it dollars, be it people, to then redeploy to innovate. And so in today's environment, in today's macro environment, today's budgetary environment, efficiency to us is, being able to deliver that, being able to bring solutions that deliver that is innovation in and of itself.
And you should tell the listeners that you collect bachelor's degrees like baseball cards, huh? How many have three or four? Is it four now?
I have the good fortune of having three. To be straight and upfront with the audience, and hopefully my parents aren't listening, I actually finished my bachelor's degree in engineering at Virginia Tech. I'm a proud Hokie. I'm actually a Blacksburg native. I finished that in 4 years, and I convinced my parents to pay for another year of school under the guise of finishing up two other degrees. But the real motivation was I was dating a girl down there in Blacksburg that's now my wife, and that gave me another chance to spend another year at school with her. And it worked out. I guess the ROI on that was pretty good. I was able to finish up with, I guess, another couple of degrees, but later on I put a ring on her finger, so that's not so bad.
Ulterior motives, my, my, my. Jim, tell us about your background, how you wound up with this scoundrel here.
Mabel. Sure. So I've been with Octo for about 6 years at this point. Prior to that, I did work with Mehul at Gartner. I was with Gartner for 9 years. I did a little stint at PricewaterhouseCoopers and really started in the market back during the American Management Systems days, right off of 66. I'm a different shade of orange. I actually went to Syracuse University, majored in finance and minor in economics, but found myself down here during the Y2K transition. There, you know, the market here was really hungry for talent, and started my work in this consulting domain at that point in time. But was really excited to see Mehul start up the company 9 years ago, 10 years ago at this point, and wanted to come over and join an exciting story that's been Okto for the last 10 years. And it's been, I think it's just been a fantastic opportunity for myself and I think for the entire team.
Well, you went to Syracuse, and we're not going to hold that against you. You can stay in the studio
that's
for
right.
the next hour. You know, years ago, back when the company was first started, I started reading about agile software development. I read all the catchphrases in the books and learned about sprints, and they talked about continuous improvement. And over the last 10 years, I've heard this word agile being thrown in just every. It's applied to marketing now. People talk about agile marketing,
right.
And people talk about continuous improvement. They talk about continuous competition. In fact, people are saying now in the commercial world, I have my website done as of today, and we're proving it every day we can. So there's not a, you know, lock the door and finish with the website. So a lot of the concepts from 10, 15 years ago with agile software development have been moving all over the place. In fact, has impact in the federal government. And when I heard about your success, I thought, well, this is a good place to talk about agile software development. Let's paint the picture here, Mehul, for a little bit. So I know most listeners know what agile is. Give us maybe a 2 or 3 cents quick idea of what this is all about anyway.
Yeah, sure. I think for us, I mean, we're a firm that specializes in agile software development. And as you noted, you know, in today's environment, and especially with technology, we're prone to buzzwords, and agile is no different. It is kind of the buzzword du jour that has been embraced in the market. But if you look at the history of software development is traditionally, and, you know, back when we first started, you know, has, you know, leveraged what's called a waterfall model. You go and you gather requirements. Once you pass through that sort of phase gate, you move on to actually initial development and then testing and then validation and locking that down. And in the federal marketplace, those cycles, you know, associated with water development have traditionally, you know, been very cost obtrusive, have required a lot of investment in time, and resources and what have you. And what Agile does is it sort of allows you know, some of the same principles, candidly, that you have even with waterfall, but allows us to do that in a much more iterative fashion. It allows much more incremental development and allows folks to see much more incremental progress towards achievement of a specific objective. And, you know, the genesis of our firm really, you know, started in much the same way. I think for us, we initially, you know, started working with a number of different customers that had waterfall efforts that were failing. They had, you know, an IT initiatives, major mission systems, Occupational Safety and Health Administration, for example, you know, where we have supported since 2006, where when we were brought in initially, their core mission system, you know, they had struggled to implement a new system. But we kind of brought in an approach that allowed them to look at requirements, isolate those requirements into 1 month sprints. You know, really focus on what could be developed within a 1 month time frame and allow iterative development over those 1 month chunks. And, you know, over the course of a year, we were able to get done what some of the other folks that had been involved in some of those efforts hadn't done, you know, probably had failed to do over three different efforts. And so, again, you know, Agile allows, you know, you to really see a lot of incremental progress in a much shorter period of time.
Let's set up the problem here. Traditionally, the federal government would say, I want to buy a table. And they would research tables that are out there. They'd come up with a request for table. And then 20 companies would respond. And then 6 months later, you'd have a table. And it'd be very, very frustrating. And this traditional application of acquisition has been applied to software. And if someone wrote a version of Oracle 5 years ago and it never changed, it may apply. But there's so many different changes. There's so much short product life cycles. It's very, very difficult to apply in the federal area. What I'm going to do, Jim, is I'm going to give you 30 seconds to open this up. We're going to take a break and come back. And you can expand more on the NGA and what your success there.
Sure. So we've been performing at the NGA at the National Geospatial Intelligence Agency for about 6 years. Our primary focus there was not necessarily in the management consulting domain. It was primarily in the technical solution space, starting and introducing agile concepts within their operations center really deploying some mission critical functions. That relationship and our success there led to the ultimate award of the Agile Web Presence contract back in this past summer. That's a $34 million contract to support their overall enterprise presence on all levels of security and all domains.
That's a good tease. We'll take a break and come back. We'll talk more about agile software development and having an agile web presence and how that works with the acquisition process for the federal government. You're listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. In the studio, Mehul Sangani, CEO, and Jim Vance, Senior Vice President, Octo Consulting Group. Welcome back to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. In the studio, Mehul Sangani and Jim Vant, CEO and Senior Vice President at Octo, OCTO, Octo Consulting Group. You can go to their website, octoconsulting.com. Pretty slick website. I was there this morning. It's kind of a lab there. What's this all about, Mehul? Is it an Octo lab, an OLab? What is that?
Yeah, I think conventional thinking, and that we take great offense to, is that Silicon Valley has a monopoly on innovation. And, you know, I think we have some very talented innovators, technologists here on the East Coast, especially in Washington, D.C., serving, you know, our government in our own right. And so one of the things that we try and do to really drive home the fact that we bring innovative solutions is we try and eat our own dog food. The solutions that we bring to bear, the IP that we bring to bear, the things that we can deliver that are productizable, we have tried to compartmentalize and integrate into our own lab environments. We have our own sandbox environment, labs.octoconsulting.com. That's our OLabs website. And you know, there you can see a little bit of some of the open source technologies, the user design centric principles that we employ, and some of the products that we've been able to bring to market. And these are products that we've developed based off of, you know, at the end of the day, we're a services company. But the products then allow us to point to innovation of our own, solutions of our own that we're able to bring to market to lower the cost of delivery, you know, for our customers. And at the end of the day, what this lab environment also allows us to do is a sandbox environment to allow us to prove that we could rapidly deploy solutions. We have, you know, cloud infrastructure there, prepackaged technologies such as, you know, we're obviously a Microsoft partner, but also some of our open source tools that are based off Ruby and some of these other things that are data visualization technologies, all are there in the environment and allow us, you know, if we can bring in a customer in the morning and they tell us a little bit about their mission, by the afternoon, we're able to prototype a solution in that lab environment that mimics and addresses some of their mission components and allows us to prove to that customer that we can deliver innovative solutions and deliver incremental value in a short period of time in a rapid way. So it's not just talk, but the proof's in the pudding there relative to that lab environment. Again, OLabs is how we branded it. Labs.octoconsulting.com is where you can find out more.
You start talking about dog food. Yeah. And speaking of food, my wife and I are going to the Wildfire Restaurant in 2 weeks. And I think you walk outside and look right across the street, and that's your building, isn't it?
That's right. We are located in Tyson's Corner. We were fortunate enough to get, you know, it was a proud moment for us.
The big old sign in the building.
Yeah, we were able to get a sign. And, you know, I joke with my wife, you know, as an entrepreneur, you know, having, you know, your sign on the building, I think is, you know, certainly a milestone that you're quite proud of. And the day that sign went up, I joked with my wife that I was going to take a lawn chair out there, out in front of the building with a six pack and just stare at it. But I didn't do that, but I came close.
Almost. In the first block, we started talking about some of the innovation and NGA. So, Jim, tell us more about the NGA and where you folks fit in with this acquisition.
Sure. So I think there have been two problem sets that Mehul really spoke to earlier. One is obviously the macroeconomics, the budgets that have been really shrinking for that community and the resources, limited resources that are available to them. They've had a significant number of, as a result of 9/11, large vehicles that were coming to an end with premium rates on those vehicles. And so they had that occurring. At the same time, they really wanted to try and move from, and they have been implementing this construct known as the Scout Agile Framework, SAFE, not only at the project level, but at a programmatic and portfolio level. So they wanted to prove out how well, I think, really to test at some level, taking this concept of SAFE, not only to help them move towards an agile technical delivery to achieve more rapid results and to meet the mission criticality, but also to see if they could use that to push the resources to a level that were more palatable to the new reality that they were facing. So they had some creative and really cutting edge contracting officers over there. Jonathan Mostowski is one of them. He's been leading the charge at that organization to implement an agile acquisition concept. Specifically, they wanted to identify a way to possibly not only fix price, the actual cost so that they were known, but also to put it at a cadence or a level where if they got too far along and they were realizing that this was not the necessarily the system or the way that they wanted to go, they could easily, you know, end that program or end that relationship so that they could pivot rather rapidly to a new direction based on where the Agile framework may have been taking them.
And those are three important words, fixed price per sprint. Now, in the commercial world, a sprint is usually, I don't know, 3 or 4 weeks, and it's a group of people that put something, throw it on the board, see if it works. I always think of whiteboards and stickies and people arguing, and that's what I think of a sprint is. And so this is one way to apply this sprint methodology to federal contracting, isn't it? It's an innovation way. I'd never heard of it before.
It really requires a tremendous amount of collaboration, not only from the program that's running or identifying those requirements, so the mission set, the technical folks that are delivering, that CIO or that technology group, but also contracts to make sure that they're all in the room and there's agreement as to, okay, we're going to commit to a certain number of story points or requirements within that particular time frame. In this contract case, it's a sprint is a 2-week period of time. So have we committed for a particular release? Are we all in agreement that these are the requirements we're going to prioritize and focus on? Now, that does not... that still requires, even though that's at a project level, there is a requirement that the government and the stakeholders really have outlined in that year-long or 2-year-long program, whatever the program length is, they've provided the architectural runway or the guidance so that they know that they're not building these increments and at the end they have, you know, 25 increments. They actually have something that's coming together from an engineering challenge standpoint that's going to be a feasible, workable product set at the end of the day.
You tossed out a word there, a story, and it seems something like, you know, you read a story to your 2-year-old at night or something or other. But this whole concept of a story is integral with agile software development. And if you go to OLabs, if you go to Okta Consulting, they have blog posts on whiteboard stories, agile user stories, and talks about DevOps and agile failure to success. So we can get more information about this from your website. Is that right, Mahan?
That's right. Yeah. OktaConsulting.com is our website. Obviously, we have a lot of information. We have some thought leadership there under the thought leadership section of our website, but it also links directly to that innovation hub that I talked about before. Our OLabs environment, labs.octoconsulting.com, includes a lot of our, not just our products that I talked about. I mentioned Silicon Valley not having a monopoly on innovation, but also, you know, some core concepts relative to user-centric design, agile principles that we espouse and we bring to bear for our customers.
Jim, I got a question for you. Years ago, when my wife had time, she'd put together these quilts, and you have a patch, 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 and put it all together, and it looked good. And
hopefully.
And she liked doing that, I guess. I don't understand it. But when I think of stories and agile software, I think of patch, 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 story, 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 story. How do you stitch them all together? How do you get the framework to make them all one blanket?
Well, I think that comes back to that partnership I talked about, you know, that having the technical PMO, it was really responsible for making sure that the engineering challenge is being met from the overall programmatic standpoint. And then that collaboration with the product owner, which would be the mission owner, to identify, you know, this is where I want this service or product to be at the end of the day. So with that understanding and their ownership over that direction for the mission, what needs to be accomplished by the mission, and that partnership back with that technical organization to ensure that overall engineering solution is going to be, or question is going to be met or addressed, is going to be key. I think there's a lot of times where that technical organization has also owned or has been primarily responsible for the mission outcome of that system. And this is what's, I think, led to some of the failures. In the case of SAFE, or the way that NGA has implemented SAFE, there is an absolute requirement that the mission is at the table every step of the way when it comes to delivering on the product.
I'm sorry, Mayhol, let me interrupt.
No, I think there are a couple of things that are, you know, important to really drive home relative to the uniqueness of what, you know, this particular customer has done here. Number one, it's a fixed price per sprint contract. So at the end of the day, in alignment with, you know, agile acquisition principles, you know, there's a focus on outcomes. But separately from the perspective of agile software development, instead of delivering against a fixed and acquiring a fixed set of requirements, they're acquiring a fixed amount of development capacity. So there in and of itself, I think that's what, you know, makes this unique. And in what does that, you know, by acquiring specific development capacity, you're not only aligning with outcomes, but it gives this particular customer, other government customers, a fair amount of flexibility, as Jim has talked about, and the scalability to do other things. And lastly, the fact that it's in a secure Amazon cloud infrastructure provides resiliency too. So very unique in a lot of ways.
Yeah, I think it's interesting. That's why I have you guys in the studio.
Yeah.
You're listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. In the studio, Mehul Sanghani and Jim Vant, CEO and Senior Vice President at Octo Consulting Group. Welcome back to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Today we're talking about flexible acquisition along with agile software development and some innovations in this area here. In the studio, we have Mehul Sanghani, CEO, and Jim Vant, Senior Vice President of a company called Octo, O-C-T-O, Octo Consulting Group, just out there in Tyson's Corner. You know, I teach in the classroom. I got students all the time who learn and trying to figure out this, and they read blogs and they go to YouTube. And they read books sometimes. So, Jim, what do you read? How do you keep up on this? What suggestions can you have for my listeners to keep up with this technology?
Sure. I think particularly for myself, the IC has a tremendous number of industrial organizations, including AFSIA, INSA, which is the Intel community's probably premier association. And then particularly for NGA, there's the USGIF, the GEOINT Foundation that really studies these topics. I'm pretty active with their small business working group right now as far as studying particular acquisition reform issues. We're looking continually out at what's going on in the market and how we can make recommendations to the government and how to help them improve the acquisition process. Security is a major issue in this particular area as far as processing our folks and getting them involved. But the predominance of that research and my study on this comes from those organizations and the trade shows that are conducted on a pretty regular basis.
And I talked about my students. When I was a student, we used to have these essay questions. Was compare and contrast this and that, and compare and contrast the causes of the Civil War, and compare and contrast. And I always set up questions like that for my guests. So Mehul, compare and contrast. You know, there's an innovation over the GSA called 18F. Now, that's an agile process of acquisition. So how does that compare with your innovation here?
You know, what's interesting about 18F is that, you know, on the surface level, they are a innovative entity, a government entity that has been set up to service other government agencies. So on the surface, they are in many ways competitive with what we do. We're a digital services firm, and they are digital services internal entity servicing government agencies. But, you know, one of the things that we love about them and their mission is that we share, you know, a common fabric. They employ user-centric design principles to support their agencies. They employ lean-centric design principles to support their agencies. They embrace agile. They published a digital services playbook, you know, that parallels, you know, our own. If you go to the OLabs environment, labs.octoconsulting.com, it parallels all of the design principles that we embrace as an entity too. So, you know, in some ways, I think they do compete with us in the sense that they support government agencies and we support government agencies as a contractor. But anyone that espouses, you know, some of those same principles that we do, that has that kindred spirit that we do, you know, we're fans of that. Separately, I think one of the things that's noteworthy, you know, because we're here talking about this NGA procurement, is that relative to Agile Acquisition, 18F recently put out, and we participated in, you know, an Agile Services BPA where they were looking, you know, to try and identify contractors that could support them in their mission of supporting agencies. So, you know, that acquisition is still ongoing, although they've made some initial awards. But what's interesting about that, what's innovative about what they did, is that they asked folks, rather than submitting a solicitation, to submit working software code, working prototypes.
Within a couple weeks, yeah.
Yeah, within a very short window. I think initially we were hoping it would be an even shorter window. I think it was going to be 3 days, and I think they ended up extending it to 2 weeks. but again, we participated in that, and then they evaluated that code against, you know, the digital services playbook and standards to make some awards. But you know, I would like to draw some, you know, some distinct differences between that acquisition and what NGA, you know, did with this acquisition, which is equally unique. Again, you know, rather than, you know, again, like 18F requested, this particular acquisition leveraged the traditional procurement model of submitting a proposal and submitting pricing and an overall approach. But what is unique, again, about this is that they are acquiring, rather than acquiring belly buttons, rather than acquiring and asking folks to deliver even a set of mission outcomes, which is a distinct performance-based acquisition principle, they've acquired development capacity that they could surge up and surge down, and they've specified a set of outcomes relative to resiliency and productivity that we have to deliver against. And so to me, you know, I think, you know, going forward, and this is just me speaking, I think agencies will look to adopt both. I think agencies will have challenges perhaps in fairly evaluating going forward code if they choose to adopt the 18F acquisition approach. But this approach that that NGA rather has employed, where they asked to to acquire a fixed price for a given development capacity, a fixed price per sprint, I think that's a great way of marrying the old with the new. And, you know, aligning not just agile acquisition principles with the way things, need to be acquired going forward to be in alignment with initiatives like Fitara, incremental development, cloud-based environment, fixed capacity. The NGA acquisition, I think, represents a much better framework and a much better role model for how things will probably move forward near term. And the 18F acquisition, I think, while interesting, I think will be more of how agencies move towards the longer term. You know, fix working prototypes that allow them to see what you can deliver in a short period of time.
But I would argue that the NGA construct's not for the faint of heart. I mean, you definitely have to have a very strong government team. And by team, I don't necessarily mean just the technologists, but the procurement and the mission organization. There really has to be a tight linkage back to what I was saying earlier about that need to really manage that process throughout the life of that contract.
Yeah, and so that communication's key. I think it's in today's acquisition environment, you know, there is, a paranoia a lot of times in our minds relative to having that level of communication within the contractor community. But that's critical. It's the crux of what makes us successful. And kudos to NGA for embracing that with their acquisition.
Absolutely.
Here.
Jim, I got to ask you a real practical question. I guess it's the 500-pound elephant in the room. It's called human beings. And in this process, the human beings have to make a transition to shorter capability release. Now, it may be best practice, it may be what everyone's doing, but human beings like to resist change. I mean, this has got to be part of the transition they're making there. Is this a shorter capability release, isn't it?
It is a shorter capability release. I think that there have been enough significant prior historical issues within that organization where they were really willing as an enterprise to look at a new way of going about accepting change and trying to move forward with accepting co-delivery. There are some legacy systems that are within the organization or processes such as security have not necessarily shifted, not because they don't want to, but because of the nature of the beast, where that process doesn't necessarily adhere to the agile delivery process and integration at the speed in which that team may be moving. And in some cases, we need to make sure we have that in place just so that we don't have the types of issues that are occurring across the government technical space today. So there's been some resistance to change in that area. But I would say for NGA in particular, what I've observed is that team as a whole is able and willing to move forward with this new construct. And they've been very pleased with the outcome.
And Mehul, in addition to that change, they have to delegate authority, which can be struggles for human beings. Isn't that true?
Yeah, absolutely. I see that all the time. I have issues delegating authority to my children. but I think at the end of the day, I think if you look at what allows initiatives like this to be successful. It's communication, as I've stressed, but also being able to have delegation of authority and span of control, having that change, being willing to change that to allow other folks to contribute to, you know, a specific set of outcomes. All those things are critical.
And John, I just like to add one more thing. I think the probably the most difficult change here is not about Agile. It's that particularly for this contract and any other contract, it's moving from a time materials based contract to a firm fixed price contract. Right. So where you have an expectation or you're going to see a particular person in a particular spot, you're giving away or you're delegating that trust to the contractor. Of course, they're taking on that risk with a firm fixed price vehicle, but being okay with the fact that you are really buying that capacity that Mehul brought up earlier, not buying those bodies to be present.
And it's the utility environment that we're moving towards, you know, relative to IT. I mean, when you pick up your telephone, you have no idea how many belly buttons are at the other end of that. All you want is a specific capacity and a specific outcome, which is that dial tone when you pick up the phone. And the same can be said here, that they're looking to acquire a specific development capacity and not have Ned or Fred or XYZ belly button there. They're looking to have that capacity be delivered as an outcome as a result of what we're delivering.
And I think that's where the largest human change issue exists.
Great. Let's take a transition here and talk more about agile software development and all these contrasts or these paradoxes of dynamic acquisition with fixed price. It's a fascinating discussion. You're listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM in the studio. Mehul Sangani and Jim Vant, CEO and Senior Vice President at Octo Consulting Group. Welcome back to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. In the studio, Mehul Sangani, CEO, Jim Vant, Senior Vice President, a company called Octo Consulting Group. You guys are on Twitter, is that right? What's your handle there, buddy?
At Octo Consulting.
A-O-C-T-O Consulting. And my handle is at Ray Gilray, believe it or not. And you may be surprised to find out that this is a podcast you can listen to from the Apple Store. Just type in Federal News Radio and listen to this as a podcast if you want. You know, I go to events all the time, and people like to hear Mehul on the radio. And they come up to me and they go, now, I know that guy's real smart, but what kind of phone does he have? And that's really what they want to know. They don't care about technology competence or successful. He's gone from nothing to 200 employees in 10 years. Who cares about that? What kind of phone does he have? Is he the kind of guy that has an Apple Watch? And they want to know this. And so I put together a scientific 10-question test.
Oh, boy.
That is unassailable. And it will scientifically determine which one of you two is a card-carrying nerd. Without any further ado.
Mehul will win, I'll tell you that.
Well, we'll find out.
See, the nerd see, yeah.
First question for Mehul. Do you have an Instagram account?
Yes. Mm. At Mehul Got Swag. You want to follow me?
How many cell phones have you purchased for yourself in the last year?
Two.
Mm. Do you have a personal Twitter feed?
Not a personal one, no. Mm.
Have you ever used Meerkat or Periscope?
I have used Periscope.
Mm. They're getting some nerd points here. Yeah. What kind of smartphone do you have?
The latest app, Apple 6.
And what's the most popular app in that bad boy?
I would say Instagram, maybe for me. That's where I do my selfies and Virginia Tech football posts.
Good, good, good. So we break into your house tonight. How many IP-enabled devices do we have floating around your house?
I believe we probably have four or five. I have a couple of different iPads for the kids. My wife has another iPad for her personal use. She likes to read on it. And then a couple PCs.
What's the most recent post in social networking for you?
A selfie I took before I came in here.
Wow, this is getting some nerd points.
There's no way I'm winning this competition.
He's got a propeller head.
That's right.
And tell me, Mehul, when is your Apple Watch due?
I don't have an Apple Watch, unfortunately.
Close. All the air goes out of the room.
That's
when
right. Yeah, no Apple Watch.
Last book you read, was it electronic or paper?
Paper. Three and out.
Jim, you're going to have to whoop him on this one. We know his weaknesses here. Okay, Jim. Do you have an Instagram account?
No, I do not.
Mm. How many cell phones have you bought for yourself in the last year?
I bought two.
Okay. Do you have a personal Twitter feed?
I do.
Have you ever used Meerkat?
Ask if I ever use my personal Twitter feed. But
have you ever used Meerkat or Periscope?
I have not.
Mm-hmm. What kind of smartphone do you have?
I have a Motorola Droid.
What's the most popular app on that?
Probably Waze right now. Mm. I like to make sure I know where the police are sitting.
How many tablet devices do you have in your house?
I have, let's see, does that include Nintendo DS for my boys?
Nope.
Okay, so two.
Two. Most recent post in social networking?
Was probably our AWP win, actually, on through Octo.
Mm-hmm.
There's also some good ones of Jim in a Halloween costume on his Facebook.
Boy. Oh, talk about that. Don't talk about that. And when is your Apple Watch due, Jim?
I will not be purchasing an Apple Watch. Aha, I am not an Apple guy.
We have a theme here. Last book you read, electronic or paper?
It was paper.
Paper. Yeah. Well, you thought there'd be a big gap there, but just edged out just barely by the big guy sitting across from me.
That's
just
quite
barely.
All right on that scale.
He knows he butters his bread.
The hokey kind of just edged out here. You know, when I first read about 18F, I thought about iterative development and fail early, fail often. I said to myself, well, is this going to fail? They're going to come up with 19F and then 20F and then keep on moving down the streets in Washington, D.C. and 21F. And so my question to you, Mehul, is where is federal acquisition reform heading? Is it all going to be flexible? Are they going to adapt to the new technology, new way of thinking? Or is it is this going to be another iteration and GSA does it one way and DOI does it one way and DOT does it another way and they come up with something is like an iterative process?
Well, to me, I think what, you know, we've been here to talk about is obviously some of the innovations that are taking place in federal acquisition. But I think, you know, to be candid, it is a little bit of a misnomer. This is like turning around the Titanic. You have a lot of macro factors that are in place that make, you know, some of these changes challenges. You have, you know, for all intents and purposes, the demographics backup is a aging federal acquisition workforce. And, you know, the inability to, you know, or challenges rather, you know, to attract and retain the next generation, you know, that is going to probably embrace some of these principles. But, you know, what I see is a movement towards things that address some of those macro demographics, if you will, and those social issues, which is, you know, a movement towards making acquisition simpler, a movement towards enforcing greater accountability, and movement away from, you know, traditional acquisition principles that don't necessarily lend itself to allowing you to get the most value out of IT.
You know, Jim, I do a lot of work in the aerospace industry, believe it or not. And back in August, the Air Force had a big acquisition. And when they interviewed the people about that, they said they wanted to move away from large, complex procurements to something simple and serviceable, open architecture, and more distributed platform. I hear this all over the place. Air Force, NGA, GSA. Seems to be a theme here, doesn't it?
Certainly. I think when you hear, when you talk to NGA and the director at NGA talks quite a bit about bringing commercial imagery in to the overall domain and the overall source that they're using now for intel processing and to support the warfighter and as well to support civilian missions. But, you know, I think any time that we're talking about bringing in additional platforms and moving towards an open architecture, that again puts back the onus on the government or those government contractor partners to really own the engineering question and the problem set. Because, again, you don't want to be in a place where all of a sudden you're fully dependent on providers that you have very limited control over and not being really ahead of the game as far as what is your backup plan in case those providers aren't giving you what you need, or how does it integrate with your overall architecture you currently have in place and the investments that you've made.
You know, Mehul, earlier you talked about Ruby, kind of tossed that word out real quickly. Go to your website, you're partners with AWS, with Microsoft, and with Oracle.
Right.
It looks like you got this little toolkit you carry around, and I'll pull out whatever tool it works. A flexible, iterative tool. Maybe AWS for this one, maybe Oracle for the next, huh?
Yeah, and I think in today's government environment, in order for us to be the best advisor, in order for us to be the best innovator and you know solution provider, being technology agnostic has been critical to our mantra. I think you know, having a one-size-fits-all approach, you know, I think that's what has lent itself to challenges for firms like IBM here over the last 10 years is that, you know, they're going to only bring IBM technologies to market, and that limits your effectiveness, you know, as an advisor to the government. I think if you're only bringing one set of tools to the table, if you're HP and just bringing one set of tools to the table, especially in an environment where they're asking you to deliver better, cheaper, faster, you know, where open source technologies that are free, you know, are available, you know, some of the technology, the OEM providers, if you will, original equipment manufacturers, you know, they have challenges embracing that, even if it is in the best interest of their customers. So for us, being agnostic is the way to go, allows us to stay true to, you know, the things that I talked about, being user-centric, design-centric, and being agile.
And it's attractive to our customers because when they want to order capacity, and they decide to pivot on a technical platform, they're not all of a sudden having to look at their vendor or their source provider for those services, because they know that that provider, like Okto, it has an ability to cover multiple technical platforms.
Now, Jim, I don't want to rain on your platform or rain your parade here, but you know, there's this thing called a technical review that has to take place. This has got to be thrown in the process too. I mean, especially with the sensitive information you're handling here. I mean, this isn't, you know, these people do with a lot of information. So how does that fit in the whole Agile process? Is it good or bad, or is it a shorter iteration as well? Or
it's iterative. I mean, there are, as I mentioned before, there are project, program, and portfolio levels of reviews that are being completed and executed through that process. So the project is obviously working at a very different cadence than what you might see at the portfolio or program level. But each of those organizations are responsible for managing their enterprise, their engineering question set that they're responsible for, really being the owner of, seeing that through the entire process, particularly for SAFE.
Product owner again, huh? There's a worm that's thrown there from the sprint mm-hmm. idea. Well, thank you very much, gentlemen. I think I have a better handle on Agile software development, a better handle on how to acquisition. But I think this is a story that's going to have many, many iterations down the road and all kinds of different 18Fs, like I said, 19Fs. I don't know what's going to happen. I think it's the only choice. And the remark about the aging employees at the federal government, that's true. Folks like me are going to move out, and younger folks in their 30s and 40s may be more adaptable to this. And I think it's they don't have any choice. I mean, in order to save money and be quicker, you have to adapt in a quick fashion. You are listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. I'd like to thank my guest Mehul Sangani and Jim Vanth, both from Okto Consulting Group. Thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy of Lectromech, providing solutions to design, certify, and maintain aircraft wire systems. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear the entire show on our website, federalnewsradio.com. Federal Tech Talk only on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM.